This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind a Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
I know what you're thinking. Mine's bigger than yours, right? It's not fair. Throw it away. All right? All right!
They're coming! The rats are coming! Thousands of them!
Tell me about Disneyland.
They got tons of popcorn there.
Yeah.
And all you gotta do is go climb a tree to go eat it.
It was a night like any other night. Then something happened.
Oh, good Lord! It's unbelievable. It's horrible.
Hey, wait! There's something weird here.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family.
We're at downtown Toronto headquarters. Here's episode 86. The reboot, the remake of George Mihalka's seminal Canadian classic, My Bloody Valentine. This is 2009's My Bloody Valentine 3D.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I mean, love is in the air, you know, it's February and Valentine's Day is upon us, so what better time to take a look at the remake of My Bloody Valentine. My Bloody Valentine, the original, Mihalka's classic, this is a bona fide horror classic. I mean, this is a film that came out in the early 80s that has been cited by Quentin Tarantino himself as his favorite slasher film. He called it the Deer Hunter of Horror.
Yeah, and interesting, the remake was filmed in Pennsylvania, like the Deer Hunter as well, and when you talk about the pantheon of horror and antagonists and some of the more overlooked ones, sure, you got your Jason and your Freddy and these
Mike
ones
Myers
have Mike Myers have achieved such cultural prominence, but when you have the likes of the masked killer from The Town That Dreaded Sundown or
the
Harry
tall
Warden
man from
the
Phantasm,
tall man, yeah, Harry Warden, I would take a Phantasm or Harry Warden over a Mike Myers. Like, Harry Warden is an incredibly iconic figure. The mask is incredibly creepy. The setting for this thing is incredibly creepy because it heightens the effect of horror to set something in a place that's already horrific. In a previous podcast, we discussed Hospital Massacre, where you have a masked killer hunting down victims in a place that's already fraught with terror, a hospital. Now, I'm claustrophobic. Mines scare the crap out of me. I don't like tight spaces. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you have this guy all adorned, dressed head to toe in black with a pickaxe hunting down miners and townsfolk, that is something incredibly creepy. And that's something that this, the original and this one, exploit to great ends.
No, I agree with you. Harry Warden is an incredible character. I mean, I had the pleasure and the honor of interviewing George Mihalka at Horrorama.
And we should also say that you guys work together. He teaches a film class at your college.
He does, yep, indeed. I could say he's a friend of mine. And Mihalka is a, he's just a really, really super nice guy. And one thing I asked him about is, you know, how do you account for the enduring appeal of Harry Warden? And he said, well, yeah, I mean, the one thing about Harry Warden is he could be any of us. I mean, he doesn't have supernatural powers, right? He's not some unstoppable zombie like Jason became. He's not somebody who can invade your dreams like Freddy Krueger. He's just a guy.
An ordinary, average guy.
Wearing a mining costume, which he would wear if he worked in those mines. You know, he's got the gas mask to cover up his identity. He's got the mining helmet with the flashlight. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, he just wields a mean pickaxe. And very, very cool about Harry Warden.
Yeah.
But when I was another thing about the Deer Hunter of Horror and why Tarantino called the original My Bloody Valentine the Deer Hunter of Horror is because you had a bunch of people who, they weren't, you know, your standard garden variety, like young high school or college victims. Yeah. They were post-college. I mean, these are people that were just living in this mining town. The original My Bloody Valentine was filmed in Nova Scotia, but they, you know, again, they try to purport that it's a American town, although My Bloody Valentine was as Canadian as it could be. I mean, they were drinking moosehead beer, for God's sakes. And, yeah, they're just people who are sort of like, they're aimless in life. I mean, they don't really have much of a future ahead of them. I mean, in the Deer Hunter, you had some people returning from a horrific war. This would be the Vietnam War.
Yeah, and all that they've got left to return to. And again, the, you know, your Christopher Walkens and these characters, they go, like, this is what we fought for. Like, to come back to the land of opportunity, and we're doomed to working in the mine. Well, this is the fictional town of Harmony, Pennsylvania, where all the people here are just, this is the only game in town. This is the big mine. This is the thing that drives the local economy. And 10 years prior, there was a mine explosion, mine collapse that claimed the lives of several
those
of the workers
in the mine. Yeah, and there was one lone survivor, and that was Harry Warden. Now, in the original, there was something very cool.
Yeah, he survived by dining on
those that
did not make it. Yeah, when he was trapped down below.
Yeah, no. In this remake, they basically
excised that bit. Why? You figure?
Well, I mean, listen. I mean, this. Okay, they might have excised that, but I mean, this film doesn't pull its punches in other regards. However, yeah. So we have Harry Warden, the one survivor. He's in the hospital convalescing. He's comatose, but then he wakes up and there's a bloody massacre in the hospital. I mean, there's a nurse that goes and checks on him. Next thing we see is her chest cavity open, her heart's missing.
The victim is cleaved in half. Yeah,
just like in the first film, you know, the heart is placed in a heart-shaped box. Now, there's a cop on the beat played by John Rivette, Tom Atkins. Tom Atkins, the guy's been everything, Halloween 3.
Yeah.
Creepshow, Escape from New York, you name it. He's on the case. Now, Warden, he's done with the hospital. There is a party going on. There's a bunch of young people. You have somebody named Axel. I mean, that's not to the original. There was a character named Axel as well. And there's a character named Tom. And then he's dating Sarah. Now, these guys are partying in the mine. So, they're down there. And who should be set upon them? Well, a figure clad in the mining attire, and this is Harry Warden himself. And there's a massacre. He kills altogether 22 people. So,
it's something this town has to live down in a decade hence. Yeah.
And now we go a decade, flash forward a decade.
It's like Columbine, like they'll never, you know, get over that.
Flash forward a decade in the town of Harmony, Pennsylvania, and Axel has grown up to become the sheriff of this town. Tom has moved away, but then the prodigal son returns. And when I say prodigal son, it's almost literal because he's the son of the owner of the mine. And he comes back to the town because he wants to sell the mine.
Yeah, and understandably he's met with, ill welcome. People's livelihood depends on this mine being open and the fact that this sort of, you know, the scion of this family fortune would just come back from wherever he was. This is a big city, and just like determine their fate. They're understandably resentful of this guy and wondering what the hell he's going to do.
Yeah, Axel's not happy because, I mean, this is his wife's high school sweetheart. He's back now.
Yes.
And interestingly enough, what coincides with Tom's arrival back in the town is
more murders.
More murders. More murders committed by a pickaxe bearing mining costume clad murderer. Harry Warden is back, or is he? You know, that's the conceit of the original. That's the conceit of this one. There are some differences. The first one, there was a whole conceit of the Valentine's Day dance.
Yes, which was canceled due to a spate of murders, and then eventually, I guess the townsfolk just said, like, listen, we're tired of being
Of living in fear. And
living in fear, we're going to have our own fucking Valentine's Day dance. So
the murders are happening anew, and they said, and basically that was to say, like, don't hold the dance, so they cancel the dance. And the miners, and one thing we got to say about the miners in the first movie, there was a real sense of camaraderie about them. These were real people.
Real blue-collar folk.
Yeah, and you got a sense that the town, you know, they rallied around these people. They were the heart and soul of the town in the original My Bloody Valentine. In this movie, they're just there, you know? But, you know, so the miners in the original movie, they say, hey, you know what, we want to have our dance. So they...
Yeah, they host their dance in this, in after hours, in the mine, in the lunchroom, and they get really wasted, and again, you know, you alluded to Moosehead beer, the classic Canadian beer from the East Coast. They're all downing their beers, they got their girlfriends there, and they decide that it would be a great idea when they're just incredibly wasted to hop in a boxcar and descend into the mine shaft. And then, of course, that's when they're set upon by Harry Warden in the original, and that gives it a certain mystique that this one doesn't have, where you have people, where you get a sense that you're, it's like Jaws in a way, you get a sense of the safety, your sense of personal space is not being invaded when you're above ground, and then as soon as you're subterranean, that's when the real shit goes down. So in the original, when they descend into the mine with their girlfriends, and the guy starts hunting them, that's something, like they're descending into the gates of hell, like they're going down below, whereas here you just don't get that sense. And that's one of the many differences between the original and the reboot. Another one of which is they really went whole hog on the nudity front in addition to the gore, but not so much the atmosphere. The nudity in this one is unbelievable.
Well, there really is only one scene of nudity, but what a scene it is.
Yeah, there's a high rolling trucker. And he's, you know,
he's basically a doppelganger for Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yes, and he's got a lady of the evening, an escort, in his, flea bag motel room. And once he has his way with her, he throws her whatever denomination, $100 bill. She protests that she's not a hooker, but she doth protest too much. She really is an escort. And he has been surreptitiously filming her with his little camcorder. Yeah. And she gets wind of it. She's right pissed, and she doesn't want to be, you know, a porn star, and she chases the guy out in the all together.
In the all together, full frontal and everything, yep.
Right into the motel parking lot, runs after this guy. He tries to seek refuge in his 18-wheeler.
In his big rig, yeah.
And he gets fucking annihilated.
Yeah.
And
he gets a pickaxe right in his balls.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
That was so cool, especially in 3D where this pickaxe just came out of fucking nowhere and just goes right into the middle of his cranium.
Yeah.
Like, whoa.
No, I mean, the thing is, this film does not skip on the gore at all. I mean, earlier in the, before we get into the 10 years hence, I mean, there's an incredible shovel decapitation. That's an amazing scene. And another thing that I really enjoy about My Bloody Valentine 3D is the 3D. I love 3D. I'm a 3D aficionado. When I was a kid, I was taken to a lot of 3D movies, and one movie that I was taken to was called The Man Who Wasn't There. A very forgotten film starring Steve Guttenberg.
Forgettable or forgotten?
Both, because I don't remember much of the plot. All I remember is that it was about a man who was played by Steve Guttenberg who took some sort of invisibility serum, and then shenanigans ensued. But there was some horror elements to it, and I'm sitting there, I might have been 6 years old, and there are knives being thrown, and they're coming right out of the screen. And they're, like, as soon as I get into, like, where your eyes are, blood starts pouring down, man. I was just like, I couldn't believe it. My mind was blown. I was taken to see, to a repertory cinema to see Vincent Price's House of Wax in 3D. I ran out of the theater screaming, man. I was scared. But the reality of the matter is that from a young age, the love of 3D was implanted in me. So, when this film came out, this was sort of like, in 2009, there was something that was happening where they called it real 3D. This new advancements in 3D technology. No longer would you be wearing those cardboard anaglyph glasses. Now
the red and green. Huh?
Yeah, and so I went and saw this on opening night, and all I wanted to see was shit coming at me, and this movie delivers that in spades. I mean, you got pickaxes coming at you. You got eyeballs popping out when there's a pickaxe going through the back of the head.
Yeah,
the
eyeball comes right out. Amazing, amazing, amazing. There was a car crash with a tree branch.
Yep.
Just coming right through the windshield, just right at the viewer. Like, holy shit, this is great.
Bullets coming at you, all that stuff.
Yeah.
That was followed up quite quickly by Piranha 3D. Again, another movie where shit was coming at you. I love it. But, and, you know, and I have. I mean, I got a 3D TV. I got a 3D Blu-ray player. So we just watch this movie in 3D. I've never seen this movie in 2D. So I think a lot of the effectiveness of this movie is the fact that, you know, these really cool 3D gore gags. Now, a word about 3D. I mean, ever since then, movies after movies are released in 3D, but this is not 3D. These movies are not filmed in 3D. They're filmed in 2D and post-converted into 3D.
Yeah, I was thinking of recently I saw Gravity with Sandra Bullock, George Clooney, where it has this sort of shelf effect where things are sort of not coming at you, but they're sort of staggered coming out of the screen, but they're not coming at you in a way that you would duck in the way that we were here.
Clearly. That's the thing about 3D. You're supposed to be like, well, you want to reach out and grab whatever's coming at you.
Yeah.
In fact, it's funny I'm saying coming at you because I just got a Blu-ray called Coming At You. This is an 80s spaghetti western that was filmed in 3D with shit coming at you.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to watch that on my 3D TV. This one took full advantage of that. My Bloody Valentine 3D, it was shot in 3D, and it was just completely, like, it went for broke. It was gory. There was so many 3D people. Some people say it's gimmicky when she's coming at you, but if you're going to go 3D, man, go whole hog.
Yeah, why not? Why not?
I don't need to see depth. I want to be ducking. I want a knife coming at me, and I want to duck that fucking knife.
Yeah.
You know, so this movie delivered that. However,
there was not depth in other areas?
Well, that's the whole thing. You know,
some spotty performances across the board.
Without a doubt. I mean, we have, with the exception of, you know, some genre vets who always deliver, like your Tom Atkins, also Louis Teague, who was in Roadhouse. Okay, you've got
Roadhouse. Family Guy has ruined Roadhouse for
I know, totally.
Roadhouse.
But our podcast on Roadhouse, I think, has sort of elevated it a bit.
Yes.
That was a fun episode. But anyhow.
Yeah.
The lead is played by a gentleman by the name of Jensen Eccles.
Yeah, who's just terrible.
He's more wooden than, you know, your lumber department at Home Depot.
Yeah.
Mr. Eccles, I IMDb'd him. He's in Supernatural, a TV series I have not seen. Have you seen it?
Never seen it.
Apologies to fans of Supernatural.
Uh-huh.
His one-time paramour, so he played Tom. He played
the heir to the Haniger fortune.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah.
His one-time paramour, Sarah, is played by Jamie King, ex-supermodel. And Axel, who is now the town sheriff, is played by, you're very familiar with this actor.
Yes, the wonderful Kerr Smith. I don't want to wait for love to be over. There's my Dawson's Creek theme song. He was the gay character, opposite James Vanderbeek and whatever the former Miss Tom Cruise.
Katie Holmes.
Yeah, Katie Holmes. he was on that. He's bloody awful here. He's the town sheriff who looks all of 21.
Mm-hmm.
And he's supposed to be like the gravitas and he's the long arm of the law who's supposed to take control of things after Mr. Atkins, the genre vet. He's retired.
Yeah,
and this guy
retired,
is his charge. This guy is incompetent beyond belief.
So you were a watcher of Dawson's Creek then?
I was. I admit it. I don't care.
So were you on Team Dawson or Team Pacey?
I was on Team Pacey, Joshua Jackson, good BC Canadian boy there, you know.
Like, were you more Katie Holmes man or Michelle Williams man?
Oh my God, well, back in the day, like, and you gotta admit,
Katie Holmes, when you saw
her in that movie.
The Gift,
yep. When it was just her, like, you know, showcasing her C-cup splendor. You fast forward to that one bit and the rest of the movie, be damned, you know? But it turned out, this is not the Dawson's Creek podcast, but it turned out Michelle Williams turned out to be
became quite the actress,
She's a very compelling young actress.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that you mentioned Dawson's Creek because, you know, when I interviewed Mihalka and I asked him, I mean, first we talked a whole bunch about the original My Bloody Valentine and what made that film so great. And I said, so, what do you think of the remake? And
he bit his tongue.
The first thing he said, I mean, he said, look, I'm honored. The reality is there have been thousands and thousands of movies made. Only a handful have been remade. Now, as a horror fan, you might think that every movie is remade, because every movie seems to be remade at this point.
Fatal Games is not remade. Final Exam is not remade. Hospital Massacre is not remade.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he said, you know, like, the one thing that I have to say about the remake is, like, when I made my movie, I mean, I take umbrage with every character looking like they came from central casting. I wanted my characters to be real. I wanted the fat guy to be not the laughing stock of the butt of the joke, but the hero. You don't get that in the remake. I mean, these characters all come from central casting. I didn't want the sheriff, as you were saying before, to be the same age as, you know, those he has authority over.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And they're all just way too good looking. Like, his jawlines and his beautiful hair, and it really undermines the sort of small town, you know, one horse town aesthetic that they're trying to go for, because these people would have been long gone. Mm. These cashiers in this town.
Oh, I mean, this movie features
they're like perfect ten.
The most stunning grocery clerk cashier you'll ever see in your entire life. I mean,
yeah.
So, I mean, ultimately, there's a lot of beats that this one follows. There are differences, but there are a lot of similarities. Ultimately, it comes down to, who is Harry Warden? How has he come back? Why is he killing yet again? But in the grand scheme of things, I mean, you know, like, I've only seen this movie in 3D. And what is entertaining for me is the 3D aspect of it all. I think, as if I saw it in 2D, it would literally and figuratively be flat.
It would be flat. That's true.
Because it's just like most horror remakes nowadays, it doesn't have that sense of that spark the original had, you know? So it really does...
Well, the biggest disappointments for us being the two we always bring up is Evil Dead and Halloween. Just made several years apart, both lacking in the spirit of the original, the understated POV aesthetic of Carpenter's original, and Halloween was just abandoned wholesale in favor of this exploitative, just white trash carnival thing.
Yeah.
And the other, Evil Dead, just completely excising the humor and the good-natured fun of the original, and just for what? Again, central casting, people who happen to be stuck in a cabin in the woods. But these are two that come up where they just, yeah, where the originals are somewhat tainted by these reboots.
Mm-hmm.
Not that these are the worst or
the most egregious examples.
Ones
are way
tons.
Worse.
Yeah,
like Prom Night, which we talked about in an earlier podcast. And Black Christmas, and I mean the list goes on. I mean, they just keep remaking. Why? I have no idea. You know, in the indie film world, in outside North America, there are so many amazing horror films coming out, but in Hollywood, it's just like a dearth of originality, and they just remake, and very few of these remakes even can stand in the same shadow as the original. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, they keep doing it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. This one is, I mean, it's interesting, because I'm going to say it's one of the better horror remakes.
Yeah, it's true.
And yet, at the same time, it's really not that great. I mean, it's fun.
It's sort of pedestrian. It's not. It doesn't reach the same heights as, I would argue, The Hills Have Eyes or the exemplary Dawn of the Dead.
Or The Fly, or Invasion of Body Snatchers 78, or The Thing. I mean, these are the remakes, you know, that are up there. But it's a fun slasher. It's got very little depth, which is something you can't say about the original My Bloody Valentine, which had a lot of depth. It's got some great kills. It's got some good gore. It's got, you know...
And the reboot recreates the original antagonist hunting down his victim in the... amidst the overalls, and the minor regalia that's hanging from the ceiling. Mm-hmm. He's sort of trying to fight his way through the clothing to try and reach the victim. This is one of the few scenes from the original that are recreated.
Yeah,
I
want to
say
whole cloth,
if you wanted the pun, but
to the washing machine death in the original.
Yes,
the
as well.
Death,
yeah, the dryer death. Yeah.
So I mean, it's got
not the shower death. This is a great one that we've covered in our book. That's a little teaser there. We're gonna talk about that a little bit more as we, you know,
closer to the release date.
We don't want to spoil anything there. But
overall, My Bloody Valentine 2009, it's fun.
It's got enough to commend it, and not enough to detract from it that we could convincingly give it a sort of, no, maybe lukewarm endorsement.
Yeah, it's a middling recommendation. Mm-hmm. However, if it came down to watching this or the original, there's no comparison. Watch the original. Mm-hmm. The original is a bona fide classic.
For sure.
This one is okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, what did we learn from My Bloody Valentine 3D? Okay, well, so I'll say, if you're going to remake something, go for it, man. Go for the gusto. Don't pussyfoot around.
Mm-hmm.
Don't take something and make it PG-13. Go for the hard R. That's what this film did.
Yeah, and Evil Dead did as well. Like, go for the hardcore practical effects. Not any of this, CG bullshit. Mm-hmm. Go for it. There's torsos. There's
torsos that are cleaved open. They mm-hmm. within 3D, it's very cool. Cause you got
There's rats eating hearts.
Yeah.
There's pickaxes buried into the craniums of victims. There's pickaxes thrust through the lower jaw of victims. Like, holy crap.
Yeah.
There's some incredibly inventive, disgusting kills here.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's one thing, is if you are going to remake something, go for the gusto. Don't pussyfoot. Don't pull your punches.
Mm-hmm.
Just go whole hog. Which this one did, and that's what makes it a fun film.
Yeah, and go 3D if you can, too. That's one thing we've learned, is that if you take something that's, you know, sort of pedestrian and schlocky, it ratchets it up the tension a little bit to have it in 3D. We would have maybe added a half a star to our Prom Night podcast had that film be rendered in 3D.
But about real 3D.
Real 3D, yeah.
And that's another thing.
It compensates for a lot of shortcomings in acting and storytelling and script and whatever, all the other bugbears that, you know, plague the horror genre.
Yeah, and that's another thing, too, is that if you're going to use 3D, go fucking whole hog. Yeah,
come at us.
Come at you, man. Mm-hmm. I want to be ducking, and I want to be, you know...
Yeah,
I want
bob and weave. You want to get out of the way, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
None of this garbage post-production 3D, which is, you know, just a cash grab as far as I'm concerned.
For sure. Oh, what I learned is that despite having a killer lay waste to 22 victims in a town that maybe has a couple hundred thousand people, this sort of small mining town in Pennsylvania, and having the killer return, they handle things in-house. And unlike, let's say, a crappy show like Criminal Minds, they don't enlist the help of, like, fucking FBI or, like, state authorities. Yep. There's a fucking killer laying waste to this entire town, but they deal with it with their one, like, you know, fucking podunk sheriff.
And his one
deputy. And his one deputy.
Who incidentally was the only black character in the entire
movie. Yeah. And who's made to do the dirty work, too. Yeah. Like, you know, digging up the graves and whatever. Yeah, the poor guy.
Yeah.
It's a bad scene being a black guy in a horror movie, as we know.
So, star rating for My Bloody Valentine 3D.
Yeah, this is where our patented 5-star rating system comes into effect, because we can go right down the middle with this one. I'm going to give it a 3,
okay,
because it's just commendable. Mm-hmm. It's a perfect 60%. This would pass you as a college student, but wouldn't endear you to your professor. 3 out of 5. See it in 3D. Enjoy it.
Mm.
It's not great. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely 3, you know, eyeballs protruding out from the screen for me.
3 pickaxes out of 5.
Yeah, I mean, if I saw it in 2D, I'd probably take that down to a 2.
Yeah, for sure.
But, I mean, the 3D effects give it a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth another star for that, so to get a 3 out of 5. But, I mean, the original My Bloody Valentine is a 4-star film all the way. Maybe
for sure.
4.5. So, you know, yet again, I'm going to say, if it comes down to this or the original, go for the original.
Yeah, go for the original, but the reboot won't exactly give you the shaft. Anyway, check out our website, www.reallyawfulmovies.com. Check us out on Twitter, awful_movies, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.